It's 106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes.
It's dark and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
Hi, I'm Serena.
I'm Haley.
And I'm Zoe.
And this is
The Bold on the Big Screen.
So welcome to the fourth episode of The Bold on the Big Screen. And today we have a very special guest.
Hi, my name is Zoe. I am graduating this semester. I'm studying journalism with a minor in communications. And I just love movies. I love them for pleasure. I like them for talking with people. I like having background noise sometimes, but they always just feel very cozy, and I'm a big movie fan because of it.
We're all in the same boat, I think, about how much we love movies.
And it's
so exciting to have a guest finally.
Yeah, we're so happy to have you here as our first ever guest.
It is so exciting. So this episode we'll be talking about the cult classic, The Blues Brothers. It's a comedy musical that was released in 1980. It was written by Dan Aykroyd and John Landis, and the latter also directed it. It stars Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi in the titular roles, and it has a load of different musicians and actors that have different cameos and supporting roles in the film as well.
Yeah, so we're super excited to have Zoe here with us today. I'm going to start, as usual, by getting into our lovely summary. And again, as usual, going to give a spoiler warning. We're going to talk about pretty much all the ups and downs of this movie. So I'll start with our summary. After his release from prison, Jake Blues, who's played by John Belushi, reunites with his brother Elwood, who's played by Dan Aykroyd. The two Blues brothers return to visit the orphanage where they grew up, only to find out that it's at risk of being closed down, unless the Penguin, which is the name they have for the nun who runs the orphanage, can come up with $5,000 in 11 days' time. The pair become convinced that they are on a mission from God to save the orphanage, so they decide to get the Blues Brothers band back together. What follows is an insane musical journey of epic proportions as the Blues Brothers and their band wreak havoc all across Chicago. Should we get into our initial reactions, everyone? Who wants to go first?
Yeah, I can go first. My initial thoughts. I have seen this movie, I don't even know how many times. Like, I have here like 3,000 times, which is obviously hyperbolic, but like, it's a lot of times. I think the first time I saw it was when I was probably 6 or 7 because my parents are such big fans of it. My dad spent a lot of his childhood in Illinois, and both my parents are avid SNL fans, which this started as a skit, of course. And then I also, when I was a teenager, went through probably the weirdest, in hindsight, Carrie Fisher phase, where she's not in a lot of movies except for Star Wars. So this was played over and over again when I was in high school. And I'm also always excited to see all the cameos and pick out all these people I recognize in the movie. Yeah,
I totally agree with you. My first bullet point on here in my notes, it says that this movie has been a part of my life since I was a kid. I also think the first time I saw it was when I was like 10 years old. And I think all three of us have this in common. I wrote this down. I said, if you have cool parents, like all three of us do.
We do have cool parents.
Then most likely you were exposed to this movie at quite a young age. Because I think it is, you know, it is rated R, which is interesting. But I also think it's, you know, it's that 80s.
I didn't know that was rated R.
I know, because like, I was like, oh, I guess I saw it when I was 10 years old.
It does drop the F-bomb. Mm-hmm. Like once, I think.
It's definitely a language thing.
Yeah. Wow. But yeah, my parents grew up in Chicago. My mom is actually from Joliet. And so she loves to talk about, she's like, I know exactly where that prison is. Like, that was a real prison. So my mom loves this movie. And so it's sort of been something that has been part of my life since I was a kid. So I have a lot of very deep personal connections to this movie. If that makes me a little bit biased in this movie's favor, then we'll just let that be that, because you kind of can't really help it. But I don't know, I think it's such a fun movie. I don't think you can watch it and not have a good time. And every single time I watch it, I have a good time. So yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was actually my first rated R movie I ever saw. I can't really remember exactly when I saw it, but my dad was like insistent that I saw it. Like, he's like, this is important for culture. Like, you mm-hmm. have to see this movie. And I completely agree with him. And I feel like I watch it, like, once a year at least. Like, and it's usually to show someone who hasn't seen it before or watch it with someone who loves the movie also, because I think it just, like, has that relationship with people. But I actually wrote a hero's journey essay about this in high school, my junior year of high school. I wrote a whole essay about this movie. And my teacher was so happy about that. But yeah, I love this movie. It's just such a classic. It never gets old, and I don't think I'm ever not gonna enjoy it.
Yeah. And you know, I've never thought about it as a hero's journey, but it kind of is, I guess.
No, it totally is.
I mean, it's kind of like an anti-hero's journey.
They're on a mission from God.
Yeah, that's true.
They're on a hero's journey.
I know. It kind of, watching it last night again, made me realize I feel like it had to have inspired Brother, Where Art Thou a little bit.
I haven't seen Brother,
you haven't seen that?
I haven't either.
It had you can see similarities. Mm. But anyway. But that's the point is, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou is a hero's journey.
Oh, okay.
And that's why I was like, oh yeah, Blues Brothers totally is.
No, that's a really cool take on it, I think.
Yeah. There's also clear mentors and, like, clear enemies. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's cool to have that perspective, because this movie is sort of, and a lot of the things that I'm going to talk about when we go into this, is it's not really like a film you can really analyze, because it's kind of just for fun. It's pretty, you can kind of tell that it's, like, really just to have fun. But it is cool to, like, think about it as, you know, there is some deeper things you can break apart with this movie. But should we segue into talking about the things that we liked?
Yeah, let's do it. I think the first thing I said was just how fun this movie is, which is exactly what you just said. It's not like, it isn't something that's metaphorical. It isn't, like, super profound. It's just, I said, it's the fucking Blues Brothers. That's just what it is. And that's what makes it so special, is that we get to follow the journey of these two men, even if it doesn't really mean a whole lot in, like, a metaphorical sense or, like, a symbolic sense.
Yeah, and I think something that this movie is so unique for doing is it somehow manages to be an action, a comedy, an adventure, and a musical all in one movie, mm-hmm. which is so impressive. I feel like musicals specifically are such a specific genre. It's like you either love musicals or you hate them. But this movie is enjoyed by so many people, even though it is in its own way kind of like a musical. Yeah. But it's also an action movie. It's also a comedy. It's also an adventure movie. And so I think it gives everybody something to enjoy. And yeah, I really like it. And like you said, it's just such a fun movie. And for me personally, as like a personal connection, I just really like movies where the characters go on a journey. And where they, like, visit, like, a bunch of different places and a bunch of mm-hmm. different people. Every single place they go in this movie is iconic.
Yeah.
And every single part feels like a little story in itself. Mm-hmm. And I just think that's so cool. And it gives us such a fun journey to go on, which is partly why I think even though the movie is 2 hours and 15 minutes long, it doesn't feel that way. Because there's so many different parts about it, and each one has its own, like, entertaining aspect to mm-hmm. it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I love that there's just, like, such small details throughout the film that, like, really cues you into who these characters are. Mm-hmm. Like, before you even see their face, you know what their name is because it's tattooed on their knuckles. Mm-hmm. And just, like, the way they interact with each other, the things they say, how many beers they drank at Bob's Country Bunker. Like, you learn so much about these characters without them telling you. You have to figure it out. But you get all the details. They're all fed to you. They're spoon-fed to you. And I love that. I love
yeah,
that about
and
film.
Didn't we, like, while we were watching it, it's like $300 worth of beer.
Yeah.
Which, like,
yeah.
In the 80s, yeah. How many beers did that have to be to cost $300?
I don't want to know.
Like 25 beers? I don't even know.
It's like a very concerning amount. Yeah. That's all I know.
Oh my God. A six pack of beer in 1980 cost $3.42.
That's got to be like
that's so like, much beer.
Oh my God.
And they like drive.
Yeah.
After they drive away.
I can't.
Soberly.
So incredible.
That would technically be, of course, no bar is selling a beer for 57 cents, but I would assume like a beer was probably like $2.
Yeah, something like that, like $1 to $2.
That's a lot of beer.
It's still a lot of beer.
That's like an inhuman amount of beer to consume for like what, how many, mm-hmm. 8 people is it?
I think it was 8, yeah.
Oh my God.
And also their orders, their food orders, the
oh
the
yeah
white dry toast and 4 whole fried chickens and a Coke.
Yeah.
And I love that scene in the, I mean, this is kind of totally going farther than what we've talked about, but the scene when he's like in his apartment, he's like making the toast on that like weird metal yeah. thing on the stove.
Or when he sneaks it out in Ray's music shop.
Yeah.
And he, like, finds a toaster.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
he finds a toaster at the music store.
So, yeah, just like Zoe said, there's just so many good, perfect little details that are just wonderful. And I think on top of that, one of the things I have written says that there's just, like, so many iconic things about this movie. Mm-hmm. From the costume, like, the suits with the sunglasses and the fedoras. You can't see that ensemble and not just automatically think of the Blues Brothers.
Exactly.
Like, it's a staple in this, like, it's just so iconic. And then there's, like, that moment where they jump across the bridge and just, like, everything, the musical theme, which we played earlier at the beginning, mm-hmm. everything, there's just so many iconic elements of this movie that just make it, so that's why it's a classic.
It is a classic.
It's great. Yeah.
It's absolutely perfect. What else do I have on here? I have so many things. The bond between Elwood and Jake. Like, they're not related. They're blood brothers, which is funny to call it that when they're not related. But just the way they talk to each other and the way that they understand each other, it's just, like, you can feel this incredible bond that they have with each other. My most favorite part of this are the crazy subplots. Like, the neo-Nazis. Like, yeah. Okay, that's just there.
That is so good.
Haley and I were talking about that, actually, like, when we were watching it. Because she's like, this feels like something that, like, shouldn't be in a movie.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, they hate the Blues Brothers, and that almost makes them better. Like, if you have Nazis hating you, doesn't that make you, like, a really good person?
Yeah.
You're saving an orphanage and Nazis hate you. Like, you're the creme de la creme. Like, you can't get better than that.
Nazis hate them. They sure do. And then you've got the mystery woman who mm-hmm. is just trying, in the craziest ways, trying to kill both of them.
And
a bazooka, bomb.
Flamethrower.
Yeah, flamethrower. And, like, I don't know, what I kind of read from this and what I think is just so funny and great about it is I kind of feel like when they sat down to write this movie, they were like, we just want to blow shit up. Let's just find a way to blow shit up. And so they just kind of, like, invented this Carrie Fisher subplot just so that they could find a way to have an excuse for someone to have a bazooka and to just, like, go in mm-hmm. and blow shit up. And I think it's just a good testament to the fact that I think when they wrote this movie, they kind of just sat down and they were like, we just want to do whatever we feel like doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, if we want to do something, we're going to make it work. And so they just kind of did whatever they wanted to do, and they found a way to include it and kind of make it make sense. But yeah, and it's just a testament to how this movie was sort of just about having a good time.
Yeah.
And you can tell that the filmmakers had a good time while they were making it.
Yeah, it really does carry the spirit of SNL, I think. Mm-hmm. You can really tell that this is something that was born out of Saturday Night Live, just the kind of craziness of it, the out-of-this-world production of it. Yeah. But it really is over the top, which I love about it.
I love Carrie Fisher's character, though.
Me too.
Like, I have to, I got a tangent really quick, because I just love her character. You don't even ever learn her name.
Nope.
Like, she is just this lady.
Yeah, you don't. Mm-hmm. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, she was just, like, engaged to Jake. And, like,
the mob's daughter,
The mob's daughter. She I think
so,
too.
So that's where she gets all the bazookas.
Yeah, and why she's so determined.
But she just, like, cracks me up. Like, her salon is literally called Curl Up and Die Beauty Salon.
Mm-hmm.
And like, she's just like painting her nails while reading like a flamethrower, like manual.
Yeah.
It's so funny. Like, her character is just so funny. She doesn't talk that much, mm-hmm. like, not until the end. And she's just like this really girly lady who's literally like in pigtails shooting a flamethrower at a phone booth. And it's just so funny. I think she's just hilarious in it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it seemed like also when she has her little monologue to Jake, the angriest she is about is the fact that she had to remain celibate for him.
Yeah.
She's like, I remain celibate for you. I was like, damn. You got abandoned. No, I would be pissed too.
I love that they're like lovers in this movie, because like in real life, they were actually incredible friends.
Uh-huh.
Like Carrie Fisher, like the first time she ever did acid was with John Belushi.
Yep.
And I love knowing that.
And she's just incredible. Like, I mean, what a good person to cast in that role, and just...
Mm-hmm. She was perfect for it.
And it's such a small role. I mean, not, it's like kind of a small role, but she fills it so well. And it's mm-hmm. just, again, you can tell she probably had a blast acting in that role.
Yeah, because like up to that point, she'd really only been in Star Wars. She had been in like something else, but like this is something that got to be different.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Although it did come out the same year as Empire Strikes Back, so lucky people got to see Carrie Fisher on the big screen twice in 1 year. Good for them.
True.
Let's see. I was going to say also just Aretha Franklin scene. I just love it.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. Like, she's never, ever acted in her life except for in that. I'm pretty sure. I don't think she's been in anything else. But I thought she did a good job. She had her attitude and she told him off. And she was like, you better think. And I think it was great. I loved it. That's like one of my favorite like little cameos, I guess. I wouldn't say it's
cameo.
Yeah,
her cameo. I didn't even know it was her until like at the end when they play the credits. And I was
really?
I was like, no way. I was like, you're kidding.
That's Aretha. Yeah. That's my girl Aretha.
She's great. Oh, I can't even. She's wonderful.
I love her iconic line too, like the without like your dry white toast, without your four fried chickens, without your Coke, and without Matt Guitar Murthy. And it's just such a good line.
Don't you blaspheme up in here. Okay. Oh. I felt it. I felt the anger.
She did do a good job.
So good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to talk about the humor element of this movie, mm-hmm, just because the deadpan, like, slapstick humor, it really gets me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the scene when the apartment blows up.
Yeah.
It's just so funny to me. And they just, like, climb out of the rubble and, like, dust themselves off.
Yeah,
and they're
like,
it's fine. Yeah, and I think, I don't know, it's just such a good representation of visual humor and situational humor.
Mm-hmm.
And I am very, like, comedy is probably my least favorite genre, especially today. I just feel like comedies today are just a bunch of dry one-liners. And it's just so unoriginal and just not good. And so it's so refreshing to see a movie that has humor that's, visual and situational humor, and it's just so much fun. You know, like the fact that they wear those sunglasses even when it's super dark outside, and they like never really comment on it. I guess they kind of comment on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like so good. All the police cars getting destroyed, and and then there's that part in the church scene when the choir is singing, and there's like people are like flying in the air. I just think it's so funny. It's just so extravagant and over the top in like the perfect hilarious type of way. And I just think it's exactly the type of comedy that I really enjoy.
Yeah, I love that church scene. That's probably like my favorite scene in the movie. It's so funny. So funny.
It is so good seeing him do his was he doing backflips or my mom so the whole thing is I was telling Haley last night that I had 25 minutes of this movie to watch, which I'd seen it so many times, so it wasn't like a big deal. I'm also gonna go on a tangent that doesn't have anything to do with it, but it'll have a point. But I go on to Showtime to watch it, and it was taken off at the end of November. It was taken off, and I was like, well, what do I do? So I tell my parents, I'm like, I don't know what to do, like I need to buy Blues Brothers. I was actually just going to rent it. And he's like, why don't you just buy it? We'll just all watch it as a family. And then as we were watching it, my mom was like, was that really him doing backflips? And I was like, I don't think so. And she was like, well, he has a really convincing stunt double. Because he does. Like, whoever they picked for the stunt double was top tier. But that entire scene, it was choreographed so well. I just love it.
The lines are so funny in it too, like when Elwood's like, what light? Like, it's just so funny. And then he's like, the band, and it's just so funny. And like James Brown is just like the preacher.
It is.
Like, it's just James Brown.
It is James
just
Brown.
Casually being a preacher.
Also, I don't know if anyone knows who Chaka Khan is. She was like a singer in the 70s and 80s, but she's also in the choir. And I was like, that's Chaka Khan.
No
and my
way.
Mom was like, oh my God, that's Chaka Khan.
Like, no way.
After like 40 years, my mom never noticed. And then my dad's in the back like, yeah, I knew that. It's Chaka Khan. I'm sure you did, Dad.
Sure, Dad.
It's so funny. Yeah, it's an incredible cast.
Oh, I know. I don't know how they got such an incredible cast for this movie.
I'm sure they had their
budget.
Yeah, the budget had to have been crazy. That's another thing I wrote.
I looked it up, actually. Wait, let me find it. So the budget was a couple of things I looked up because I just like wanted to know. First of all, they destroyed 104 vehicles for this movie,
Jesus
60
Christ.
Of which were cop cars. Because there's just that scene where all the cop cars are getting destroyed one by one. And it was a $27 million budget, which today's equivalent is $97 million, which is a lot. I mean, it's kind of average, actually, for today, isn't it?
For the time. Let's see, like...
How much is the new Avatar?
400
Avatar.
Million.
Yeah. I was going to say, isn't the new Avatar movie like...
Really? $400 million.
That is ridiculous.
So the Blues Brothers is actually balling on a budget, is
well,
what
yeah,
because
like you would think when you're watching it, they destroy so they drive through a whole fucking shopping mall. Like they you do. Would think that the budget is just astronomical, which for this time it probably was a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, compared to today's standards, it's really not anything insane.
Well, to put it into perspective, I looked up Empire Strikes Back. That, which is like an epic film visually, was $30 million.
Okay.
So, you know what I mean? So, like, the Blues Brothers was pretty comparable in budget to a Star Wars movie.
And another thing that I love so much about just, like, older movies in general
mm-hmm.
is just the fact that everything was a practical effect.
Yeah.
Right? Because nowadays, I feel like there's so much cop-out where it's like, oh, we'll just CGI it, or we'll just, like, do it in like, special mm-hmm. effects. But 80s movies and like just movies that are a lot older in general, the use of practical effects, it just makes it like last the test of time so much better than I think any of these like new modern movies ever will.
Exactly.
You know, they destroyed 60 cop cars, but
we'll
enjoy it. I mean, we've enjoyed watching 60 cop cars get destroyed for 40 years, and we're gonna enjoy it for however many more, you know. It's it's just, I almost feel like it's worth it to have those, the use of those practical effects.
Yeah.
I just want to know what they did with, like, the Nazi's car. Like, how was it flying through the air?
I didn't look that up. I should have. Like,
how did they do that?
I don't know because I didn't look it up. But I think at least the shots that, like, it's, like, the tiny car. It's got to be, like, a little tiny model that they just, it's, like, a little toy car that they
put
on a string and just, like, wee.
Oh, you're so right. It probably was
it
a little
model. It kind of looks like that, too.
It probably would have been.
I don't know. I could be wrong, but that's what I might would be my guess.
That would make sense. I also think it's incredible that they actually drove through a mall. That's an
actual
mall.
And actually, I want to talk about that because that's my favorite scene in the entire movie. It might only be my favorite scene because that's like the most memorable scene to me from when I was a kid. Because I think I saw this movie maybe when I was 10, and then I didn't see it again for like maybe 10 years. And I didn't remember anything except for the mall scene.
Mm-hmm.
And so the whole time I was like, I can't wait for the mall scene. But yeah, it's just, it makes me miss going to shopping malls weirdly. Just because, I don't know, it's like shopping malls are so cool. And I love how they're driving through and just like absolutely blowing the shit up of this mall. But mm-hmm. the whole time, they're just nonchalantly commenting on stuff about the mall. Like, I have this quote. He goes, Elwood goes, wow, there's lots of space in this mall. And they're like pointing and they're like, oh, Pier 1 Imports. And they're just like
imports.
Pointing out nonchalantly like things about the mall as they're like going through this joyride through it. And I just think it's so funny. And all the people are, like, running and screaming. And I don't know. It's just, I think it's so good.
It doesn't bother them. They're just chilling.
And, like, it was a real mall that they just, like, freaking destroyed.
Although it was closed down at that point.
Yeah.
Which
no, there were real people.
Something to note that it wasn't, they didn't, like, destroy a mall that was actually
functional.
Functional.
Yeah.
I think that, like, I mean, there's, like, so many scenes with extras, like, in it, but I think this had to have been, like, probably the wackest one. Like, I could not imagine being, an extra in this scene and just, like, watching a car chase in a mall.
Uh-huh.
And, like, sometimes, like, when I watch it, I'm like, I wonder if, like, the fear in their faces are real. Like, I feel like that would be so mm-hmm. scary, but it's so funny.
And the music that's playing, so good.
The music in general for this movie, which I can't believe we haven't even...
I know, we haven't
talked
touched
about
on the
that
music yet.
Just incredible soundtrack. 10 out of 10. Amazing.
Absolutely. Rawhide, am I right?
Rawhide. That's in my favorites, the fact that that was the only two songs that they played at the country bar was Stand By Your Man and Rawhide.
I actually, like, one of, like, the things I wrote down for my notes about this, I was like, what was the other music they played? Like, I just want to know what their set was that night. Or did they only play those two songs,
That's what I've always wondered.
Yeah. I think, like, they kind of wanted to leave us wondering.
Yeah.
I think that's part of the humor.
That'd be funny, though, if they just played it over and over.
I feel like that's what happened.
Yeah.
They went crazy for it. They were throwing their beer bottles and stuff.
I love
how they
throw their beer bottles when they're mad, and they also throw their beer bottles when they're happy.
Yeah.
And that's why that weird mesh thing is in front of the stage, because that crowd just throws beer bottles no matter what.
Yeah. That's how they show their love is throwing a beer bottle.
It really made me want to go to, like, a honky-tonk
tavern.
I looked Sunday. Like so much fun. I was like, damn, I really want to go to one of these.
I'm thinking little last minute flight to Nashville and we go to a real
hockey
town.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Or
yeah.
Part of me wonders if
this one, Kokomo.
I mean, maybe it doesn't still exist, but if, oh my gosh, what was it called? What was the bar called they went to?
Bob's Country Bunker.
Yeah, Bob's Country Bunker.
It's in Indiana, right? I think that's what my dad said
last
night.
I don't know, but we could go to the actual Bob's Country Bunker.
Are we flying to Indiana?
Yeah. Because my dad, he was like, do you know where this was? And I was like, where? And he was like, Kokomo, Indiana, which is where we were going to live like many moons ago.
No is way. It like a real place? I feel like it has to be.
I don't know.
A little Google search.
No, we need to know. Like, we do really need to know this. I wonder if there's, like, actual chicken wire, like, around the stage. Like,
or if
it
they have some sort of
like
weird
it.
Tribute to
oh, they have brothers. To. Yeah. They have to.
Disney.
If they're a real
if it still
place.
Exists. It has to still exist.
It's in Kokomo.
That's for sure. It says here that it's in Kokomo, but it is fictitious. But I don't know. They had to have had
They had to have shot it bar. In, like, a real bar that they probably just put a fake sign up on it.
Yeah, they had to.
I mean,
right?
They had the like LED cowboy hat sign that like tilted.
Mm. Oh, it was demolished.
No. Well, that's okay. We'll just go to Nashville.
Yeah,
we'll just go to our own fun time.
That's fine. We got
Dang.
This. But yeah, I completely agree. Back to the original point of like this film has incredible music.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of the time. When I've shown people this movie, it's because of the music. I'm like, if you are someone who appreciates music, you have to see this movie because you get to see so many iconic musicians performing their music in a really hilarious setting. And a lot of them have passed away. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of these people are not alive anymore. And what an incredible representation of their life, I think.
Yeah.
Like, I love that there's just, like, Ray Charles acting and being, like, this cheap music
I
store
love Ray Charles's character
owner.
So much.
Yeah.
And the musical number with him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So good.
And I see a deeper lens, too, kind of showing the representation of who really originated this music, like,
oh,
blues.
Yeah.
You know, showing, like, I think his name's John Lee Hooker in the in the street playing blues. Like, he's one of, like, the first blues musicians to really make it big in America. To show that, like, this really was derived from Chicago by these people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was really important to show that, like, the Blues Brothers also found inspiration in them in a way, too.
And I think just the whole idea of Chicago as, like, the backdrop for this movie and, like, kind of the one of the epicenters for the blues is really cool. And I think it also helped put Chicago sort of on the map for, like, other movies to be shot in, because it made Chicago kind of this, like, iconic setting. They filmed in real places that, like, actually existed, and so people who were from Chicago just were able to have such, like, a deep connection to this movie and to the places that they filmed in this movie. And with the music, and this is kind of a tangent, we can go back and talk about Chicago in a second, but I like that this is a comedy, but that the Blues Brothers are actually good musicians.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the chemistry they have on stage together, like Elwood and Jake, is just so good.
They actually like went on tour after filming this movie. Like, I didn't know that for the longest time, and I used to work at this like retail store. And we were playing, like, one of their songs one day, and I was like, oh, I love the Blues Brothers or whatever. And my manager was like, yeah, I saw them at Red Rocks. And I was like, you just, like, saw the Blues Brothers at Red Rocks? She's like, yeah, in the 80s, like, they were touring. And I was like, no way.
What?
Like, that's so sick.
Oh, my God. And also, for people who are listening that don't know, like, where the Blues Brothers came from, I guess I can give, like, a little history of the fact that John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd were two of the founding members of SNL. Or if not founding, they were in like the first couple of seasons. The Blues Brothers, it kind of started out as like a loose skit, but then they would actually be the musical guests for some of the episodes. So it's like people knew that they were actually talented, that they were the musical guests for some of the episodes, which I think is so funny.
No, that is funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. I feel like it's almost like a secret that they are talented.
Yeah.
Like, you don't expect it from them, but they're incredibly talented.
They are.
Yeah, and they kind of even play off of that in the movie a little bit when they're playing at that big concert hall and the cops all show up and like arrest them, but then they're like, wait. We have never heard them play. Like, we've never seen them perform. And so everyone, even the Nazis, everyone, like, sits in the audience and watches them perform. And everyone has a good time because they're actually good musicians.
I know John Candy's like, Orange Whip. Like, Asheville comes. Also, John Candy's just, like, in this movie.
I totally forgot that John Candy was in it.
Yeah. And he's, like, such a minor character. But how funny.
Oh, he's amazing in everything he's in, though.
Yeah. I actually, like, I think, like, part of, like, an important note about their musical talent is that, like, the guy who, like, practically raised them besides the penguin was, like, Curtis, who's played by Cab Calloway. He's an insane jazz blues musician as well. Like, so iconic. Mm-hmm. Like, did write Minnie the Moocher, did write Heidi Heidi Ho. Like, that is his music. And he performs in the film, of course.
Yeah, they give him, it's great that they give him that space to perform himself. It's awesome.
It's so sick. But, like, of course, like, they're good musicians. That's who raised them. I want to be raised by Cab Calloway.
Yeah. And I think this was the last movie he was in.
Oh, yeah. Ever. I mean, he was, like, pretty old at that point, too.
Born in 1907.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But speaking of cameos, there are some crazy ones in here. Like, Steven Spielberg is in this.
Wait, what?
Steven Spielberg. Like, when they go to pay the tax or whatever at the end, mm-hmm. when they're in the big building, the guy who's doing the whole ordeal is Steven Spielberg.
Wait, no way. I did not know that.
A very young Steven Spielberg.
I did not know that.
Yeah. If you just want to, if you want to pull it up, you totally can. Blues Brothers. It is Steven Spielberg.
That is so insane.
There he is. The man, the myth, the legend.
How have I not known that? That seems like something I should know.
He's not very recognizable, I feel like. When he was very, I think a lot of people our age know him as Steven Spielberg now, not when he was very young. Who else? Twiggy. I don't know if anybody knows Twiggy.
Oh, yeah.
But Twiggy was in it.
I also love her character because the fact that she, like, actually went to go meet Elwood.
She was waiting.
And, like, the only thing that, like, I could think about in that moment, and Haley and I talked about this too, but, like, when they're at the, like, fine dining restaurant, the family says that they smell bad. And, like, after they say that, that is all I can think about the whole movie, is that they just absolutely reek. And so he's, like, flirting with this lady who's, like, obviously very wealthy, very gorgeous, and he smells bad.
Yeah.
And he's, like, standing over her, looking so disheveled. His shirt's, like, yellow at this point. It's not even white anymore.
So gross.
And, like, he's probably, like, and she just still chooses to go meet him.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they, yeah, they, there's so no way they smell good.
No way.
No way.
Yeah, they've never washed those suits once.
No. They sleep in them. They sleep in them.
They sleep in them. Ugh. Grody. Gross. They didn't have time.
No.
They didn't have the time.
They're on a mission from God.
They're on a mission from God.
Yeah.
And just, like, has a weird way of explaining everything that happens that makes no sense. Like, the fact that they can't be killed, it's just like, they're on a mission from God. Like, what are you going to do? Like, that's just how it is.
They also, like, convince everyone to join them by saying it, too. Like, they literally convince all of their, like, bandmates and everyone, like, to help them. They convince them through being like, we're on a mission from God. And, like, they all just are like, okay, yeah.
And, like, they're also just so charming. They could convince me to do anything.
They are probably the best criminals. Like, genuinely. They're so good at being criminals.
They are so good. Except they did end up in prison.
They did end up in prison. But, like, but they military couldn't get them.
I know. They had a good run. I think it was more like they knew that was going to happen, but they had to fulfill their mission.
The mission from God.
Yeah.
They had to fulfill the mission. As soon as that was over, it was kind of like,
okay.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Whatever.
And, like, I don't know. They seem pretty happy in person to me. Like, they're having a good old time.
They're with their whole band. Yeah.
Yeah.
We want to know why the rest of the band was in prison.
I know.
We couldn't figure it
out. I couldn't figure it out.
Yeah. We're like, maybe for, like, helping them. But like, really? Did they help them?
That I asked the same question.
They had to all go to prison together so they could still be in the band.
That's true. Maybe that they made that sacrifice. They said, you know what? We all go together.
Yeah.
We have to play music together. Mm-hmm. I bet Aretha Franklin is so mad. She's so mad. She was like, you were supposed to just play one show and now you're in prison. God damn it.
I can totally see her character just being so angry.
When I went to go visit Chicago, like 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just so cool. Like, they have a ton of Blues Brothers shops everywhere.
Yeah.
Like little things and seeing the different places that were in each movie.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
I went to Chicago last winter break, and the whole time, like, I just, like, whoever I was with, we just kept being like, we have both kinds of music, country and
and
Western.
That is one of my favorite lines. Oh, my God.
I also really like the line in the apartment when, like, the train goes by and he's like, how often does the train go by? He's like, oh, so much you won't even notice.
Yeah.
It.
Oh, that's my dad's favorite line.
Yeah. My favorite, and it's also my dad's favorite, is when they're walking up to the apartment and there's a guy in the lobby who says, you got my cheese whiz, boy.
Oh, yeah,
and Elwood did. He did. He had his cheese whiz.
Wow. It's so funny. I love that he, like, also just, like, works at a glue factory.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's with him in these, like, aerosol cans? Like, he's, like, he's got some kind of aerosol, whether it's cheese whiz or glue or epoxy. Like,
he's an aerosol man.
So many scenes. He's like, aerosol.
Oh, my gosh. Aerosols. And there's also that line where they go to that, like, lady's house and she's like, are you the cops? And they're like, no, we're musicians.
Or when they're getting pulled over and he's like, I bet they got SCMODs.
It's like, oh,
what are SCMODs? State, County, Municipal, Offender Data Systems.
Oh, my gosh. SCMODs. So good. But I love how the whole thing sort of starts because they get pulled over for running a red light when they didn't even run a red light.
Yeah, no, they didn't. It was, like, actually a yellow light.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he, like, has so many offenses on his license.
I was,
so
like,
many.
56 moving violations. It was, like, 116 parking tickets.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah. Shit. Oh, my God.
And he used the fake address on his license, too. So this isn't even his first license.
Uh-huh.
That means he got, like, another license after probably getting the other one suspended, used the fake address, and then got another one where he also racked up all these offenses on it.
Bad driver. I don't know how you can get that many parking tickets ever.
But he's also such a good driver because he, like, all these cop cars are flipping over and stuff, and he's not. He's fine. Well, he's chilling.
They're on a mission from God, you know?
Yeah, they're
so true.
They're on a mission from God. What can you do?
Exactly.
Let's see if I have anything else. I was going to say that, I think we already covered this, but the stunt coordination is really good for the time. The fact that they could do all these, like, pile-up car crashes. There's, like, 12 cop cars.
Yeah, or, yeah, again, really, like, cool. The scene when they go, like, they fly over the bridge. How the heck did they do that? I don't know.
And there was no airbags at that time. Like, there were, that was so, not, like, a common thing yet. I don't even think everyone was, like, wearing their seatbelts back then. And, like, that was not common for the time, and so, like, these car crashes that, like, all of them are just getting into are, like, deadly.
They're
car crashes
deadly.
Yeah, and they're all just coming out and they're fine,
yeah,
and I think that's so funny.
They're fine
Yeah, the cars are, like, flipping. What does he say? He's like, I need to pull over.
And he just, like, goes off. I know, and then, like, the car with John Candy in it, like, follows and just ends up in a semi-truck. And he's on the radio, and he's like, good morning. We're in a truck.
Like, in the truck. Oh, so good.
It is so good. Do we have any more notes for what we liked, or are we going to go into the upsetting part where we say what we don't like?
I think that's all I had.
I think that's all I have, too.
Again, I think there's not... I mean, we've talked a lot, but there's not really anything to analyze. It's just all just a good, fun time.
It's just so much fun.
You can't really break stuff down, but it's, you don't need to, because it's not what it's trying to be.
It's iconic. It's funny. There's not much of a point to it, but it still follows a great plot.
And it's entertaining.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah, let's get into things we maybe didn't like. Would anyone like to start?
I think this is the part where I'm going to be a horrible guest because I see nothing wrong with this movie. Well, I love this movie so much.
Yeah, and I think that's why I said at the beginning that I have such a childhood connection to this movie that if it makes me biased, then whatever.
Yeah.
Like, deal with it. I can't, you know.
Everyone accept it. This movie is fantastic. There's nothing bad about it. No, I'm kidding. But
yeah,
I personally can't find it.
I found, like, a couple things. It's funny to mention this after what Serena already said, but I kind of think that the lip syncing in Aretha Franklin's scene is kind of bad.
It was bad, actually. Do you know,
like,
what I agree,
pretty bad. And, like,
I agree.
I remember I was, like, reading up on it, like you said, Serena, it was her first, like, acting role, so she, like, obviously, I don't think, when I was reading up on it, I read something that said that she just wasn't used to lip syncing her own songs, and so they kind of they had to, like, really train her through it. So I don't think it ruins the scene. I still think it's a great scene, but I did notice when we were watching it, I was kind of like, it seems a little off.
I know, it's just like, I'm a pretty big Aretha Franklin fan, so I think this is right, but, like, even when she would do TV spots and stuff like that, Like on Soul Train, most performers would lip sync, but she refused. So like she was always like the outlier who would sing her songs always.
Which is cool.
So
yeah.
It's like something she probably just never did.
That's so cool that she did that for this movie then.
Yeah.
Like
absolutely.
She like accepted it and was like, yep, sure. I will lip sync for the Blues Brothers.
Yeah. Whatever. She was like, I'll do it. I actually think that my con, it honestly changed, but it's going to be a little bit heartbreaking to you guys probably. But when I first sat down to watch this, I was just kind of not feeling it. And I think this happens a lot if I watch a movie way too much, and this is a movie like that, where it just kind of lost its luster this time around.
Mm-hmm.
But then I realized I had never really watched this movie by myself, and I think it's a movie you need to watch with somebody else.
I was just going to say that. Because we did watch it together.
We
did.
Uh-huh. We were laughing like out loud. It was funny.
And we were talking. Yeah, exactly. We were talking about it and pointing stuff out as we were watching it. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's
because,
a really good point.
Yeah, because like when I had to watch it earlier this week, I was just kind of like, I kept getting distracted by other things. I was like, I really don't want to watch this. But then when I watched it with my parents, it was like, it was a blast. It was
right.
So fun. It was like bringing back memories of when I was a kid, like listening to my dad quote the whole movie because he knows every line, I guess. And like my mom laughing and just like, I think this goes also for a lot of comedy movies is watching it with somebody else to be able to laugh with somebody. So I do take back what I said about it losing its luster, but I guess it loses its luster if you're alone and not in the mood.
I think that's a really good point. I could totally see even being kind of bored if you're watching it by yourself.
Just like, I can't enjoy it with anyone else.
Yeah.
I think like even like the difference between seeing it with someone who's never seen it versus someone who has seen it is also so different.
Uh-huh.
Because like the people who know what's coming up and they know the lines and they know like what's going to be said, like I think that's so much more fun. Like I think my favorite time I ever saw this movie was actually like Film on the Rocks at Red Rocks.
Oh, that was amazing.
It was so sick. And like everyone dressed up, they're shouting lines, like everyone's singing. Like it was so awesome because everyone is just so into this movie that it like adds to the experience of watching it.
And I think this movie specifically has such a strong community of people that love it. There's just, if you know the Blues Brothers and you like the Blues Brothers, then you're like automatically in a community. You know?
No, it's so true. Like the first time I went to your place and I saw your Blues Brothers poster, I was like, oh, Haley, like, we're going to become such besties.
Yeah, I have a huge Blues Brothers poster in my room that I bought on the streets in Paris. I literally was just like walking and I just saw this huge poster and I was like, this is something he's telling me to buy.
You're
this.
Coming home with
like,
me.
Yeah. And it was like a huge poster. I had to bring it home on the airplane. It was kind of an ordeal. But I love it. Yeah, it's great. Yeah. And Zoe comes into my room and she's like, oh my gosh, you like the Blues Brothers? And I was like, yes.
And we're like with other people who have no idea what we're talking about. And like, that's just so how I think that's just how our generation works. Like either your parents showed you the movie, like you said, your parents were cool and they made sure you saw this movie because it's culturally important. Or they didn't. And so either you're like part of this weird niche club that totally knows all these lines about fried chicken and wearing sunglasses at night, or you don't.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And how amazing it is to be a part of that group of people.
I know, that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, shout out to our cool parents.
Thanks, Mom and Dad. Thanks.
Yeah, and so I have actually a little bit of a critique that kind of goes off of this. I think this movie sort of has a danger of being overhyped for people who've never seen it because it does have such a strong reputation like among that community, and everyone who's like in that Blues Brothers community like fights so hardly, like so strongly for this movie and just supports it so much and talks about it like it's the best thing ever.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it kind of has that danger of like for people who've never seen it but have might have heard from their friends or whoever that this is like one of the best movies ever, like it's so iconic, it's incredible, might go into it the first time sort of having an expectation that's too high. And then, you know, if you go in with any sort of expectation, you always risk the chance of being like slightly disappointed. And that's why I think like the best way to watch this movie is to kind of watch it not having any expectations, because it is so incredibly good. And but, you know, preconceived expectations can kind of always lead to disappointment, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just don't want the hype to get to people and make them be like, oh, like, this was a good movie, but I expected so, so much that it just, like, let me down. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, it totally does. No, I think that's, like, a good point. Like, if you're showing someone the film and you're like, this is the best movie that has, like, ever been made and exists on planet Earth, if they're not the kind of people who enjoy deadpan humor, or they are not into the musical thing that's going on here, or, like, they think all the action and it's cheesy, they're going to be disappointed. And I think that's a great point. I'm still going to hype it up.
And it's funny because as I was like writing these notes, I was like, I don't even know if I can say this because we're probably going to spend this entire podcast hyping this movie up. And then I'm going to nobody listened to the hype because it's just, you know.
I think it's one of those things where you just like, you're going to hype it up, but you have to be aware that some people might not like it. Yeah. I've yet to meet someone who doesn't like it after I've shown it to them, though.
I think for those of us who do have that like personal connection to it, it does mean so much more. And I can understand how not everyone will have that connection to it.
Yeah.
But I do still think everyone should see it because it's so good.
Exactly.
But, you know, I don't know. It's kind of a weird thing.
I think it's also dated, too, like, at this point. Like, it's a pretty dated film. And so if you're, like, I don't know. Like, one time I was trying to show someone, like, the movie Labyrinth. And they're like, what is happening right now? Like, this is so old.
Oh,
and like,
no,
I love that movie too, but it's because like I watched it, like I got it from Blockbuster, you know what I mean? Like, we had a VCR video of the Blues Brothers growing up. And so like, I think if you're like raised with it, like that like dated aspect to it just isn't the same. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Yeah, for us it's nostalgia. For other people it might be dated. That's interesting. There's also one joke that I really hated. It's the one when they're in the fancy restaurant and he's like trying to offer to buy that guy's wife and his daughter. He's like, how much are you going to sell me for your, or how much do you want for your wife and your daughter? It's like the only joke in the entire movie where I was like, ugh, I don't like this.
I actually love that scene. Really? I love that scene. I love that
joke.
It
is so funny.
I think that joke is so funny.
Like, I think it's really good.
I am such a feminist, but when he says that, yes, I'm going to be laughing like, out loud.
I think that entire scene is really good. Like, when they're eating the shrimp cocktail and they're like, they got their like arms and love that scene so much.
It is so good.
Yeah, for some reason, that wife buying the wife joke just really didn't do it for me. But that was like the only one that I was like, ugh.
It's so funny because I put myself in those people's shoes. It's like there's this random man who wants to buy my wife and daughter. It's just kind of funny.
And he smells offensive.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think like, I don't know. I think the line like makes it. And it's like one of those things where it's like, yes, you could definitely like not say that in a movie anymore. But it's not necessarily like he's gonna actually buy them, you know what I mean? And I think like that's why it's like okay to be funny. And also like what a location to say that.
I know. He just knows that like he has to say these things in order to like get the attention of the bandmate.
Yeah. Well, and I also just love that like they're being complete buffoons and like making such an embarrassment of Mr. Fancy Pants, that's his name, right?
Yeah.
But he still goes with them. He's like, okay. Like, sure. And then and then the guy's like, waiter, waiter. And he's like,
whatever. I want to drink my Dom and that's it.
Yeah. And he doesn't, there's not even any shit. Because
like you
left.
Kind of expect him to be super pissed off and be like, you're ruining my job. Like you're making like an embarrassment out of me. But no, he's just like, okay, let's go.
I think that's like the like interesting theme about this movie too, is like everyone they collect along their way, like has moved on with their lives and are all really successful now. Like we have Murph and the Magic Tones, like they have a gig going every night. We have Matt Guitar Murphy and his restaurant. Mr. Fancy Pants is like working at this like insane like 5-star dining restaurant, and they still all want to be in the band.
Yeah,
like the band is really like where they're happiest and like what they like. And I think that's so cute.
They're following their passion. And like I would be too. Like, are you kidding me? I would love to be in the Blues Brothers band.
It would be so cool.
I love it.
Once again, they can't refuse because
They're on a mission from God.
From God.
Yeah.
So they can't.
That's so true.
What I'm learning through this is that it's very hard to dislike anything about this movie. Because we're still talking really good about it, even though we're supposed to say what we don't like.
I know Haley's like, I don't like this. We're like, no, Haley.
Actually, Haley, you're wrong.
That's a really funny part. That joke is hilarious.
Maybe watch it again.
Yeah, I just love this
movie. Step back.
And again, I was like, everything I put in my do not like section was kind of just grasping at straws. I was like, okay, yeah. I have to find something to talk about that I don't like. And yeah, so I was kind of, that's why it's kind of, you know, but it's just, it's so good. It's so
I think that's like my only thing is if you're going to go watch it, they prepare yourself for an 80s action movie.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not going to be something that modern. It's going to feel like it's aged. It's going to feel its age.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the magic of it.
Oh,
keep
yeah.
Keep it in mind. Okay, guys. That's all I got to say.
It's still going to be amazing. It is. Hilarious. And it you can be part of this weird cult club, too.
Yeah. More, mm-hmm. We want more people in the Blues Brothers fan club. Come on. Yeah,
exactly. Join us. Please.
I have a very important question for everyone. I want to know who your favorite Blues Brother is.
Oh.
Are you Team Jake or Team Elwood?
Team Jake.
I'm also Team Jake. I've always been Team Jake.
I think team I'm Jake Team forever. Elwood.
You're Team Elwood.
Really?
This is like I
Twilight.
Blues
Brothers even kind of similar names.
Yeah. I love Edward. Jake so much. But I just like love Elwood as kind of like the sidekick. And I feel like he has, again, he has so many iconic lines.
I think more than anything, it's that like, I feel like Elwood is still like discovering himself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Jake like, is grounded.
Jake knows who he is. He is a criminal and he's a bad person and he's like okay with that.
Exactly.
I also think that Jake is the better singer.
Jake is the better singer.
Yeah.
John Belushi, my beloved. Also, Jake has my favorite line in the whole movie.
What's that?
Which is when he's, like, giving all the excuses to Carrie Fisher. And he goes, the locusts! I used to say that all the time when I was a kid. That was my excuse. My parents would be like, why didn't you do this? I'm like, the locusts.
That's so good. Yeah. Like, even, like, that. He's just, like, so secure in the fact that he, like, left her at the altar. He's just like, yep. And, like,
he's
even,
like okay,
kisses
bye.
Her.
He's like, let's go.
And then just throws her onto the ground. Like, he just is secure in himself.
Yeah.
He doesn't care.
No.
No, he's, I mean, they're both incredible. I just have such a, I always have such a, like, strong heart for this, like, sidekick, quote-unquote, character. Mm-hmm. And I think Elwood does it so well. I mean, and they're so, they're such a good balance for each other.
No, 100%.
It's, I mean, it's almost hard to pick. That was kind of a question. Mm-hmm.
It
I mean,
is
how
hard
do you
pick.
Even pick? But also, yeah. No, they're I don't unit. Know.
They are.
They are.
Like, because, like, Jake also isn't Jake without Elwood, and Elwood's not Elwood without
this is
Jake.
True.
Exactly.
This is very true.
Mm-hmm. They're blood brothers.
Yeah.
And Blues Brothers.
Wait, how do we know that they're not related? I've been looking for that in this film. Like, this, like, I think every time I've seen it, and I've never figured it out.
I looked on Wikipedia.
Oh, really?
And on their, which could not be true, who knows, but they said Blues, not Blues Brothers. Blood brothers, and I looked up what that means.
Oh, it's like where they share their blood, like they like
yeah, it's like where you have
like shake
this.
Hands or something.
Yeah, you have a devotion to somebody even if you're not related by blood.
Well, yeah, and it seems that they must have met at the orphanage.
Oh,
they were both there, and then they just sort of had this bond and grew up together, becoming musicians, and they became brothers.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they do look very different from each other.
Well, and I kind of like, they're like kind of the exact opposites of each other.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's great.
Exactly.
But like, they have the same last name, so I always just figured they were brothers.
Exactly. Maybe they are.
The mystery continues.
The mystery
are
continues.
They related? We will
are
never know.
Not?
Are we ever?
But they're brothers and at the end of the day.
They are. What really matters is they are brothers.
They are brothers. Yeah. Should we give our ratings?
Should we do final thoughts first?
Oh, final thoughts.
Yes.
That's right. Final thoughts.
But yes.
I'm jumping the gun.
Take it away.
My final thoughts. My final thoughts is that this movie will always hold a very special place in my heart. And I already said, like, I didn't know if I had enjoyed it this much this time around, but realized that, like, this is a movie you need to enjoy with other people. And then my last thing literally just says Carrie Fisher.
So.
Carrie
so
Fisher.
So true.
Underdog of this movie, to be honest.
I love this movie. I don't think I'm ever not going to love this movie. I love that I return to it. I feel like I return to it like once a year. I think I already said that. But like, I like that it's a movie that you can return to and like still enjoy time after time and show it to new people. And it's insanely special. And I'm glad that my parents, specifically my dad, like, made the effort to actually show it to me and make me watch it because it's so good.
Yeah. I'm just really happy that this movie exists. I think the world is a better place for it. You know, again, I said I'm not typically a huge comedy movie lover. It's pretty hard to get me to like a comedy, but this one just is incredible. It and pretty much exactly like Serena said, it holds a very special place in my heart. And like Zoe said, I'm so grateful to my parents for showing it to me and, you know, letting me be a part of that community. Because I also think that there's, you know, there's a lot of people even in our generation who've never even heard of it or just don't even know about it. And that just makes me sad because I think it, I'm happier having having this movie in my life. And again, I don't think it's possible to watch it and just not have a good time because it is just so much fun.
It is.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
What's your rating?
My rating? 5 out of 5. And I said for sentimental reasons, and I will explain no further.
Yeah. I'm right there with you. I also give it a 5 out of 5. I think this is the first movie on our podcast so far that I've reviewed 5 out of 5, and I have no shame for that because, like you said, this movie is perfect in my eyes. It's incredible. It's, one of my top.
I'm also going to go 5 out of 5. I love this movie. It's definitely in my top 10 of all time. I think it always stands to the test of time. It's perfect. 5 out of 5.
All right. 5's across perfect. The board. Love
perfect
to hear it.
Blues Brothers.
All right. Well, that is our 4th episode, everybody. Thank you so much for listening and having a fun time.
Yeah.
This is definitely one of the most fun ones I think we've done. And one with our first guest. So that's
Thanks for having me.
Exciting.
Yeah, so thanks, Zoe, for coming and enjoying and having a fun time with us.
Yeah, it's been real. It's been great. Makes me want a podcast.
Yeah, we have so much fun. We have so much fun over here.
It is so fun. I guess I should also introduce our next movie. The next movie we'll cover is The Thing. It's an incredible movie, so watch that before the next episode.
Stay tuned for that. But other than that, thank you so much for listening. I hope you guys enjoyed listening as much as we enjoyed talking.
Yeah, thank you guys.